This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.
So, you guys ready?
Sure.
Okay.
We've been ready forever, Dave.
I know.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Hi there, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. And Marcia's giving me the business because I'm talking way too fast here. Maybe I'm wired up because we have a couple of special guests with us today. Shirley Mitchell, who has written a play called Swamp Opera, which I just love that title because of that. I don't know, what was that, assonance or alliteration?
Please.
I forget.
That's alliteration.
That's alliteration. Anyway, I like it. I thought it was a great title.
Oh, that wasn't Shirley's voice, though.
That isn't Shirley's voice, though. And the other special guest that we have today, the other special guest is the gentleman who wrote the music for Shirley's play, Mr. Haywood Banks. And
turned the play into a musical.
Who turned the play into a musical, which would, might not have been a musical unless Haywood had written some music, right?
Wrong. I wrote the songs. I wrote everything, and then I went after him for the music.
So you're even the lyricist.
And with threatening to get, you know, I know other people, and so, you know, you have to hold something over his head. And
that's right. There you go. That's true. Yeah, you had to tell him that he had to do that or he couldn't go out and play the weasel for audiences anymore or something like that.
Yeah,
that's right. Many of you know Haywood as a musician and songwriter who has got a lot of notoriety through various songs like the Weasel and If Pigs Had Wings and You Ain't Getting Diddly Squat, one of my personal favorites. But this is really Shirley's show, and what was the inspiration, and tell us a little bit about the plot line of the show.
Well, after my kids had left home, you know, it's not really an empty nest syndrome thing. It was just simply I had more time, and my sister called and said, hey, did you ever write that story about the frog, a frog went a-courtin', because I had thought, you know, I could make it into something really funny. And I said, no, and if I'm supposed to write it, I should be able to write a song. So I sat down and wrote the lead song, Lily Pad Pond, and I went from there. The next 4 years, I wrote on it. And it's based on, I think it's a 1600 Scottish folktale, and mm-hmm. it had something to do with making fun of the Queen, and but it's that old.
Froggy did a wooing bow.
Yeah, but it's a froggy when it's important, and I guess it's done by every folk singer that's ever sang a folk song.
Yeah,
but it's about, you know, it's down at a wild pond with all these characters, all. You know, frogs and toads and Uncle Rat. And, you know, it's there's betrayal, there's love, you know, because it's spring. I mean, it's really like a Lion King type of show. It's not for children, but it includes everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a happy ending and about 18 songs that people go out of the theater singing. You know, so, I mean, it has been put on, and it's quite, I would say, powerful for the reaction that we've gotten from it.
Now, it has been produced at this point just a couple of times, or more than that?
Three times, and there's two other theaters there's actually other theaters looking at it, but they put it on their roster like, you know, a few years out.
Mm-hmm.
But this summer, Port Austin wants to do it, Port Austin, Michigan.
Yeah.
and we were Big Rapids.
Yeah.
You okay. know, and that's the thing about the play, really, people still ask about it to this day. Where is it going to be put on? How are you doing with the play? And the hard thing, I thought the hard thing was writing the play and figuring it out. The hard thing is trying to get it out there.
Right.
You know, it's like,
right.
We've sent everything for years. We've sent things out, and nobody looks at things like that anymore. It has to be done on the internet. So we've regrouped, and we're trying to get a little sizzle reel and, you know, come at it a different way, because it really, you know, it, people love this play, and, you know, and once it gets out there, you know, I will step away from it, and I've got another play I've written, you know. So,
no.
I just...
Well, tell us a little bit of what it's like. I guess I getting into the head of a playwright, what's it like to write dialogue and then also and then turn your brain around and try to write lyrics, which are, you know, you're going from dialogue to poetry and you're doing both of them. Not everybody does that.
Oh, well, I, you know, the thing is, I guess I've always written, but I also had never written a play or a musical or anything. You know, I've written songs, but not, I just didn't, I just didn't understand that you shouldn't be doing this or you could be doing this. You know, it just came.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics, the songs are part of the story. So I got the story. I got the bones of the story down. And then I went back and developed characters. And then I would read. I would go and get books out and read plays. And then I go, oh, you know, it's only two lines. You can only do two lines if you want that snap. And I learn by doing things like that. And then I rewrite the play. And the song, I kind of left open until I saw where they would be placed. And once I saw what the action was, I just wrote the song. And most of them, I just wrote it down. You know, most of them, most of it, I, they say you can't channel, but I totally believe channeling is where the good stuff comes from, you know. And then you
right.
step away and you go, really?
I
wrote that?
You.
You know, you don't remember writing it.
I have a question. Once you had the first draft written, did you do any workshopping? I know a lot of musicals go through an intensive workshopping period to get feedback from audiences and to see what needs to be improved or cut out or added to. Did you go through anything like that?
Yes, absolutely. The very it wasn't the first draft. It was really, I finished the play, and I had people read it, you know, and I kind of tweaked it. And then we took it over to our community theater in Howell. And I know that I have a prize using Haywood because...
Right.
And I know that that is why they took the play on. So they like put it together. You know, we did a lot of, you know, taking bits and pieces of the play and figuring it out. The songs had to be written in the right keys. We had to get the music done. So it was a year of putting it together
mm-hmm.
through our Howell Community Theater.
Now, are you a musician too, Shirley? I mean, I'm wondering.
No, I'm just a writer.
Did you come up with basic melodies and then Haywood kind of went off with them, or how did that work?
He's the king of melodies. He's the I really think he's just the king of melodies. But with Lily Pad Pond,
I wrote that down for her.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds like a song. That sounds like a song title to me. I'm the king of melody.
I saw like a note slide across the table there. Right. Say I'm the king of melody. Say I'm the king of melody.
Yeah. Good luck.
You and Barry Manilow, the man who writes the songs, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
But I came up with the melody for Lily's Cat Pond just because it had, I know what the rhythms are, you mm-hmm. know, and I can do that. And then I hand it over to Stuart and, you know, it becomes like, it becomes the thing.
What, a lot of your, were the songs based largely on, I mean, melodically on some old folk songs, or is it like trying to get you, I'm not necessarily based on, but trying to get that kind of feel? You kind of go, there's some variety in there, obviously.
There is, but it's, we wanted an old-timey feel to it because, you know, I didn't want to frame it in a particular place or a particular time.
Mm-hmm.
So we love folk music. We have to qualify that. But we wanted something, I don't know, Stuart's just, to me, he's original, and I don't know what you would call it, but it's always, like, better than what you can imagine when he starts to plunk away on his guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll give him lyrics to songs, and he'll look at them, start picking away, and all of a sudden it's like you hear this melody, and he says he doesn't even know where it comes from. You know,
right.
And those are the good songs.
Yeah. That's neat.
It took us a year, and that's what we did.
Now, you said you don't really have a time period set for it, and yet on the cover of the CD that you sent us to listen to, you've kind of got it set back there in the Regency style, maybe a little bit later. But and in my brain, that's kind of funny. That's where I was going when I read the script and listened to the music. What are you? Do you, when you've had it in other productions, where has it been set, or has it been just kind of I don't know, like a timeless quality?
Yeah, there's really no there's no although she mentions a razor phone. In one of the songs.
Is that evil, isn't it? It's an evil, is that right?
Yeah. And you know, but other than that, you know, there's really, I mean, at a pond, there is no time period, you know, where they're
right.
They don't have technology that can set things in. That cover was actually from we have a friend that's an antique dealer, and he found the music to, it was called Froggy Did a Wooing Go.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the cover from it.
Okay.
It looked semi-familiar to me. I think maybe I've seen that. I was wondering about that, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's an old, maybe it's an old kid's book.
Yeah.
You know, that we got, and the illustrations are just so great. I love that time period anyway, that it's the aesthetic movement, the 1870s to 1900, that mm-hmm. time period I'm really drawn to. So that, you know, so that had, you know, some influence certainly on the music and the feel of the thing, but you know, it's an old, I mean, like she said, it's an old story. It's from the
sure.
at least the 1600s. So, you know, it has different iterations, you know, through time. So there's really, you know, and betrayal and romance and fighting and singing frogs are really timeless. You know, so.
Well, yeah, you got a little bit of murder in there too, right? So.
Pardon me?
Got a little bit of murder in there,
yeah,
too.
And murder.
Yeah,
murder,
yeah.
What's more timeless than murder? Right.
One of my questions, and maybe it's kind of been answered because Shirley seems to not have had much problem with your music at all, but I wondered if there was at any point where the two of you kind of butted heads on the style of music that went with the lyric.
Not really. I mean, sometimes she'll say that's not really what I was looking for, and I'll do something else. But a lot of times I'll just look at the lyrics, and you know, the feel of the song just kind of comes out from the the shape of the words or the rhythms and rhyme to it, and also just the feeling of the song. I don't know, it just kind of manifests itself. We've seen Lion King like three times. We saw it on Broadway. We went to New York City just for a little vacation trip, and I said, well, let's go see a Broadway play. What do you want to see? She said, I want to see Lion King. I go, no, not Lion King. Oh, you know, I mean, it was just a cartoon, and I she dragged me, like a 3-year-old into the place, and At the intermission, I was so blown away. I was on my cell phone calling my kids, saying, "Okay, we got to go see this. You got to go see this. This is so right. amazing." Right. And so that's kind of the, we kind of envision that, level of production to go with the play.
Would you see this produced with those like the oversized costume and puppetry that they use?
No.
It doesn't necessarily... We don't necessarily need that, but there's certainly... because it's a little more personal, I think, than say, Lion King was. But that's kind of, the...
But there's inspiration there. There's inspiration there, obviously, yeah.
Well, your show feels more intimate than a Lion King, to be honest, though. It feels more... Yeah, I don't think I'm not sure. I mean, do you envision it being played on a 40-50 foot proscenium stage, or do you think a small house would work? What was the size up at your community theater up in Michigan?
It's a small stage, but mm-hmm. It's like we there's no sense of limiting yourself.
Yeah, sure.
If somebody says, "Okay, we want to do it on an 80-foot stage," okay, fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah, great Radio City, sure.
Yeah, really.
But there's no, I don't, there's not a, I don't, is there a dance number for the Rockettes? That's the question.
There would be, there were a number of things that people did dance numbers for.
Okay.
Cool. All right.
And, so there's endless possibilities with it. We've gone and seen other musicals, and there's just like you come out of there, and even The Lion King, I can't really pull up one of the songs that is catchy, we went and saw Wicked, and my take was that evidently before Dorothy landed there, nobody knew how to write a song that was catchy.
Right.
when you have the original Wizard of Oz with all these amazing tunes in it that we have all these earworms in it, and then Wicked, it was like I couldn't remember one song from it.
Wow.
Sorry,
and so you and and so you were your goal with this musical was to write a musical not only that had a great storyline but that had memorable musical numbers.
I've always tried to do that with writing songs, is to write a hook.
Right.
That was like one of the first things that was kind of drilled into me when I was, first started writing. I would, take my songs to some recording place, and they say, well, there's really no hooks in it. Listen to these songs. These songs have hooks in it. So I really kind of got the idea of, and earworm is like... it's a small world after all.
Yeah.
Lord.
Hey, thanks for that.
Yeah.
We'll be singing that the rest of the day.
My song Wiper Blades.
That's right.
This gigantic hook in it that people can't get it out of.
I cannot tell you how many times I've spent the day with wiper blades in my head. it's like, go away finally. But no, that's funny that you mentioned that one.
I had a woman say that her brother had to go to weekend jail, and they, just before she dropped him off, they were listening to the radio, and Wiper Blades came on, and he went, oh, no. he had to go to jail, sitting in jail for 2 days.
Oh, jeez. So what's your next steps right now?
Well, doing next is we're getting some performers, young performers together to go back and re-record like two or three of the songs. And then we're going to go out and swap the area and play up a proscenium arch and have them dressed up and just have them sing the song, you know, like lip sync the song to their recording. And then I think I want to buy space on Google or something, you know, next to whenever somebody puts in community theater or musical or play, you know, that there would be a something jump up that says, you know, swamp opera.
Yeah, you haven't been in touch with any of the licensing houses at this point, though, with something like this. Like,
no, we haven't.
Okay.
How
do people find out about the play and maybe get a perusal copy or some more information?
They can just either call me at 517-548-0909. That's 517-548-0909. Mm-hmm. And they can go to, there's swampopera.org we have.
Yeah.
And
so they can get their feet wet anyway in those two ways, and then who knows, obviously.
Yeah,
so.
and we will be putting up all the Swamp Opera songs on YouTube. I just put all my Haywood Banks songs on YouTube, and we're going to do the same with Swamp Opera and have like a little as the song plays, the explanation will be what happens, you know, in as the plot goes along.
Cool. Okay. Cool.
And, you know, I don't know, we're total pilgrims at this, so you know, we're just looking for, you know, some great singers to sing these songs. I think, I really think the songs will... people will enjoy them, and it's you know, people that weren't even related to the cast came back and saw it two or three times.
That's great.
So that, I mean, that really tells you something,
right?
You
yeah.
know, about the play itself. You know, if you're not if it's not your grandkid or your niece or something,
right.
But you still like the play. Then,
it also says something about the performances too. Obviously, they maybe they brought something to it too.
Yeah. Yeah,
and Shirley, with the knowledge that you have now and all the stuff that you're doing on trying to get this moving, what's your next show that you're writing? Do you have an idea?
Yes, I wrote a story some years ago about a boy in Upper Michigan. He's American Indian, being raised by his grandfather, and he's got a friend, Benny, who just lives up the road. And it's about bullies, and I didn't write it, you know, I wrote this story a long time ago, but I turned it into a play with some songs. But it's, it is about bullying and, you know, kids who have a really hard time. They don't have choices, you know. It's Northern Woods, and it's really pretty good. The songs, there's some just amazing songs. Stuart came up with a melody for this really mystical song that one of the boys sings, but it's kind of like a grown-up Nancy Drew. There's a bit of a mystery and, again, murder, but, you know. Ah.
More murder.
In Northern Michigan?
It's a perceived murder. It's not really,
right.
You know, it's like they have to solve
great.
That. But,
yeah,
And it's just about people's interactions. There's Betty, who owns the... you know, the cafe, the pie shop, and, you know, just all those people and their interactions. But, you know, I can't do anything with that until we can push Swamp Opera on
sure.
the door.
Sure,
Cool. Well, good luck.
Well, good luck with that, and we really hope we wish you success with it.
Break a leg.
What's going on with Heywood? Where are you at? Where are you next as a solo performer?
Well, I'm talking to the Century Center in South Bend.
Cool.
And you can I've got my schedule up at my heywoodbanks.com
okay.
website.
All right.
And if people want to hear my songs, they can go to the Heywood Banks channel on YouTube.
Hey, I saw you put all the Christmas stuff up in a big playlist.
Yeah, people, you know, they're scattered through all these different albums, so I figured, well, I'll just put them in a clump and
right.
get people in the in a Heywood Christmas mood. Then
there you go. Good, yeah, they're a lot of fun. Okay, well, thanks. I would like to thank Shirley Mitchell and Stuart Mitchell, also known as Heywood Banks, for being with us today to talk about Swamp Opera, their musical, and what the process was and things like that. I just want to encourage everyone to, let's see, it's almost Christmas time. Oh, and stop by and listen to Heywood's music on the Heywood Banks channel on YouTube. And also, if you are still looking for Christmas gifts, please go to the Theater Geek store at theatergeeks.com/store. All kinds of geek gear, hats, mugs, cups, etc., including John's favorite.
The clock.
The clock. Okay, there you go. Okay.
I don't want to get on Marcia's bad side today.
A great clock. Okay. And also remember that you can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, on-demand radio, and a whole lot of other great places on the inner tubes. That's all from us. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Chow.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Thanks very much to both of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks. It was good to talk to you.
Best of luck in your new position or whatever.
Break legs.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.